spotlighting the olfactory and soil genesis, an expanded biomantle approach. We acknowledge all who have contributed to what we present here, especially Charles Darwin, James Thorpe, Francis Holt, and Jeff Humphreys. The olfactory needs expansion in terms of process. This paper is a step in that direction. As a starting point, we integrate James Thorpe's biomantle concept with Darwin's bioturbation work, recast as expanded biomantle principles. Our purpose is fourfold: to overview the soil contributions of two giants, Darwin and Dokuchaev, to summarize bioturbation and biomantle principles, to link biomantle and biofabric ideas with the pedosphere and Earth's critical zone concepts, and to show how these ideas solve problems in the real world. Darwin and Dokuchaev. The left photo shows Darwin the year he wrote his soils book, The Formation of Vegetable Mold, in 1881. The right photo shows Dokuchaev surrounded by his students and colleagues some years after he wrote Russian Chernozem in 1883. The images convey that whereas Darwin worked alone in formulating his soil ideas, Dokuchaev was the nuclear personality of the Russian School of Soil Science. Darwin and Dokuchaev both made important, though very different, soil contributions, mainly by their books. Darwin's was on soil process, or bioturbation, whereas Dokuchaev's was on soil factors, or landscape context. Dokuchaev's approach, updated by Yeni in 1941, was guiding theory during the 20th century. The O-factor did not and does not emphasize process. Darwin's book was on soil processes, specifically animal bioturbations, based on intuition and long-term experimental observations. Dokuchaev's model provided a means to map, classify, and evaluate soils. Darwin's model lacked such means. Mainly for this reason, Darwin's bioturbation principles languished in a five-factors shadow. This woodcut is from Darwin's 1881 book. What this diagram displays is that he put cinders and marl on the surface of the soil some years before he dug pits in his tracks. And when he did dig the pits, this is what he found. And basically what he found was that worms, in his case, worms, had this, God damn it, had bioturbated the fines up, and these cinders and the marl chunks were originally on the surface. They migrated down as a consequence of the biosorting by earthworms. Here's the parent material. So he added these clasts to the surface. They sunk, and in the process, fines were sorted and brought up to the surface. It's a two-layered biomantle, and that's what this shows. Darwin's research question was, why are Roman coins and other artifacts, once at the surface, found at depth, often in a layer with stones? Darwin's soil profile shows two particle size layers, as I indicated, an upper one of fines translocated up from the subsoil, and a lower one, a basal stone layer, whose base is defined by the arrow, made up of stones, flints, and cinders. Darwin's views were gained from 44 years of soil work, where animals biomix, biotransfer, and biosort soil materials in the process of soil formation. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a diagram here that sort of encapsulated everything this talk was about, but somehow or another it's not showing up when we uploaded the talk to this computer. Integrating biomantle principles with the critical zone concept, the pedosphere, soil on the right, is the planetary interface where all the global spheres interact. Oh, I can use this pointer. So this is the pointer. The atmosphere, hydrosphere, lithosphere, and biosphere, and the petosphere is the main surface for life on the planet Earth. This is a critical zone, a new concept formulated in about 2000, and what it shows is the petosphere occupies the upper part of the critical zone. The critical zone ranges from the top of the canopy all the way to the bottom of the aquifer. The biomantle is the epidermis of the petosphere, or the soil, up here. And that's what this is, a blow-up of the biomantle. In this case, it's a two-layered biomantle, which is a product of biomixing, biosorting, and biotransfers, a la Charles Darwin. This is a real-life photograph of a two-layered biomantle taken in Carmel Valley in California. And if we take a little chunk of that, we'll see something that probably everyone in this room has looked at many times, and that's visible biofabric. So the Earth's critical zone incorporates the entire petosphere, while the biomantle encompasses its epidermis, and the concepts range from the very broad to the very small. The biomantle is the organic rich epidermis of soil unique to Earth, produced dominantly by bioturbation, aided by subsidiary processes. And these are all the processes that we normally think of in soil formation. The soil biomantle approach solves long-standing problems. Two most notable are soil stone layers and Mima mounds. First, we discuss stone layers. And here, this is basically a continuation of the talk that we were supposed to give last year at SSSA meetings in Indianapolis, but Ed Runge delivered it. So a couple of these slides will be duplicated. A two-layered biomantle formed in drift on the island surface in Dodge County, Minnesota. This is a typical and classic two-layered biomantle. Here's the drift, little outwash here, and we scrape down the area below the biomantle. The biomantle is represented by this zone. There's the stone layer. This part was not scraped down. But again, a classic, typical two-layered soil biomantle. Where the fines have been brought up by animals, and the larger chunks that wouldn't fit through the burrows simply sorted, were settled down under gravity to form the stone layer. Buried upper Midwest biomantle. This is near Iowa City, Iowa, and what it shows is the Yarmouth-Sangamon soil formed on old drift with Peoria Less on top. And it shows a two-layered biomantle above a BT, or argillic horizon, buried by Less near Iowa City, as I indicated. This is a close-up of that zone right there. And there's the BT. Stone line is right in the very top of it. Defines the base of the biomantle, which in this case consists of an E horizon and an A horizon that has lost a lot of its organic matter dark color. And that would be the upper biomantle, and the stone line would be the lower biomantle. Let's go back to California, to the Big Sur in this case, and here we have two feeder dikes. This is a granite parent material, and we have a two-layered biomantle with clasts derived from the feeder dikes forming the stone layer. You see this up and down the Big Sur, where granite is exposed or where any other lithologic type is exposed. Many, many two-layered biomantles and one-layered biomantles in the Big Sur area. Another biomantle, again going back to Carmel Valley. It just so happens that we do a lot of work out there, and that's why we're using these two examples. It's a two-layered biomantle formed in a colluvial apron of Monterey Shale in the Carmel area, The dominant bioturbator in both cases is the Botta pocket gopher, but many other organisms are also involved. But invariably, there's one dominant bioturbator, and in this case, it's the Botta pocket gopher. And there's the biomantle. And now, again, in the Big Sur area, our favorite part of California, as you can tell, is a series of multiple two-layered biomantles formed in debris flow units shed from the Santa Lucia Mountains in the interior. Sufficient time has occurred between each one of these debris flow units to allow biosorting of the coarse clasts from the finer clasts into two-layered biomantles all the way up, including the modern biomantle and the modern soil. Incidentally, in this case, every one of these two-layered biomantles is a whole soil biomantle. That is, the biomantle constitutes the whole soil in each case. Stone layers are also linked to the controversial landforms called Mima Mounds, with over 100 theories of origin. Where mounds formed in gravelly soils, they are simply locally thickened two-layered biomantles. Locally thickened two-layered biomantles. This is Mima Pit in Mima Prairie in Thurston County, Washington. It's sort of type locality for Mima Mounds in this part of the world. Louisiana and Texas are called Pimple Mounds, Prairie Mounds. There's over 30 or 40 different names for these things. But Mima Mounds is a more general name. And what you see there are these so-called Pimple Mounds or Mima Mounds all over the place. Each one is underlain by a stone layer, and that stone layer actually occurs as a stone pavement in between each mound, so that the stone layer is continuous across this prairie. And this is we sample one of those mounds, and this is what it looks like. This is the biomantle. It's two-layered. Here's the stone layer here. And the fines and small gravels have been brought up and mixed throughout the upper profile by small vertebrates. In this case, we think pocket gophers and moles. They are sorted by, according to the principles that Darwin established back in 1837 all the way to 1881. They're concentrated as a basal stone layer. So it's biomixing, biosorting, biotransferring. In this case, the dominant bioturbators are small vertebrates. So stone layers are normal and expected components in most gravelly soils of the world, even in Mima-mounded tracts. Like soil caliche, pans, and other horizons, two-layered biomantles follow the topography. Conclusions. The expanded biomantle approach with conceptual roots linked to Darwin, Thorpe, Hull, and others gives new meaning and explanatory power to the O factor. Thank you. Then I'll just tell them about this. Red Sea, Mediterranean, Nile Valley, here's our study area. Here are the backhoe pits from very high altitude. This is what the area looks like on the ground. 12 years of wind erosion and sculpting produced that biofabric. There was no evidence in any of the soil pits we dug of bioturbation. We assumed there was very little life in this desert. We were wrong. This is 100% biofabric. Biovannels, biochannels, biovugs, insect frass, all produced by invertebrates. Well, we can't. The only thing we can do is possibly go down and have the main people down there print out that one, print that thing out.